Hi everyone, welcome to the podcast. This week I have the most incredible guest. I am chatting with Carrie Schmidt, and I'm almost at a loss for words as to how to describe this conversation. It had a huge impact on me. Carrie's work is so gorgeous. If you haven't checked it out, I suggest that you hop over to Instagram and take a look at her beautiful floral expressive paintings. So I don't want to say too much, but this is a conversation about being brave enough to listen to your intuition even in the darkest of times. Carrie talks about how moments of struggle, while hard, are also ripe with inspiration and information and possibilities for change. There's also an underlying theme in her story, and she shares how tapping into positive memories from her past, her family folklore, has helped her and provided inspiration for many creative projects. There is so much wisdom in this conversation, and one thing I particularly took away from it is the relationship that Carrie has with her creativity and the way that she treats it with nothing but respect, kindness, and love. This is an amazing episode. I think you'll hear when you're listening to it just how much it blew my mind, and I hope that it has the same kind of effect on you. I really hope you enjoy it. Hi, Carrie. How are you?
Good. It's so fun to talk to you after seeing your art for so long.
I know. I'm super excited. I feel like I should have had a conversation with you by now. I'm stoked that it's happening today.
Me too. Yeah, it's very exciting. I've been looking forward to this.
So how are you?
Great. I'm doing really well. Just, you know, busy getting ready for the holidays and the sales, hopefully.
That's all coming up super quick.
How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm great. So you're in the library, huh? So you mentioned that you don't have Wi-Fi. Is that at home you don't have Wi-Fi?
Yeah, we have very limited Wi-Fi, so I wouldn't be able to talk to you, and like we can't upload or download anything. Like, I can check my email, but it's really slow. And
that's kind of nice though, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a way of stepping back from all that internet stuff.
Yeah, it's so great. We used to have no Wi-Fi at all, and we loved it. Like, our phones, we still can't call people. We can like text, but we can't send photos, but we used to have nothing, and it was so awesome. So we were never on our phones, we were never on our laptops, but because of work, we had to, you know, I kind of have to be on my laptop sometimes.
So. Well, that's what I was imagining, because, you know, these days running an art business, there's so much of it is online that you would have lots to get done.
Yeah.
Anyway, we should get on with our chat. So first of all, I just wanted to welcome you to the podcast. I've actually wanted you to come on for a long time now, because I heard an interview with you with Mady Rose years ago. It inspired me so much, and I was in the early days of painting, and since then I've kind of held on to some of the things that you said in that conversation, and it's helped me. So I wanted to let you know that.
Oh my gosh, thank you. That's so wonderful to hear. I'm such a fan of your art, and wow, that's really neat.
Yeah. I thought that it would be good to share your story and go back, and if you could tell everyone about how you got started painting.
Yeah, so I started in 2009 in my early 30s. I developed a life-threatening allergy to heat. It was really severe, so I was allergic to my own body heat and external heat. And so I could barely move without swelling and getting extreme hives and going into anaphylactic shock. And we would have to call the paramedics almost daily. So I was bedridden, and I was really depressed because I had been a very active person and spent a lot of time outside gardening and playing with my kids. And it was like a death of my life. And I was just kind of this vegetable in bed. And I was having like suicidal thoughts because I couldn't imagine this being my life for 50 years. I didn't have the like foresight to think like things could change. And so one day this voice popped in my head and said, now that your life is over, you might as well do what you want and paint. And I did not know I wanted to paint. That was not even like in my mind at all. But because I was so desperate, I listened, and I started painting in bed, and It was the only time I forgot about my situation. And I could not wait to wake up in the morning to paint, which was such a different sensation than just dreading every moment of every day. So I madly fell in love with painting, and I have so much gratitude because it saved my life. And so we had this beautiful relationship from the beginning, even though it was amidst this darkness. Our relationship was just, it was so tender. And I'm so grateful because I felt like creativity held me. And I'm about to start crying because it treated me so well that I try to treat it well in return. So that to me was the gift from that horrible experience, is that I had this beautiful beginning with this force, this creative force that I have so much respect for. And I'm grateful that I have that in that attitude, because a lot of people have fear or anxiety, and I have none. I am I love you and thank you. That's kind of how I paint. So.
Yeah,
that's how I started.
You can see that in your work. You can see that approach where painting is a gift and it's a medium almost that you use to experience life. And it's just, it's so beautiful to see. It's so soulful.
Thank you. What I feel like it did for me, I want to reciprocate and give back to it. So it didn't judge me. Like when I, when I was beginning, I didn't know what I was doing, and I feel like it just stayed with me, stayed by my side, and it never judged me. And so I don't do that to my art, because I feel like it never disrespected me. I don't want to disrespect it. So I try to treat it with the kindness that it showed me in my time of need. So.
That's beautiful. I'm going to hold on to that now when I'm painting myself and sometimes having those struggles that you do, because that's just such a beautiful attitude to have. And very inspired by that, Carrie. So you mentioned before though that you never actually thought about painting. It came just as a message. Did you have a sort of background in art, craft, or anything like that? Or
yeah, I did. Well, I loved art since I was little, and my family is really creative, but I actually wanted to major in art, but I was discouraged from doing that because, everybody says you can't make a living. And so I majored in English instead because I love reading and writing. But I put that all aside when I went to college, and I kind of turned my back to, I liked all forms. I liked painting. I liked working with clay. I mean, I liked everything. Anytime you made something, it felt magical to me. So once I turned away from that, I really had the worst years of my life. I feel like I created this literal hell on earth for myself when I walked away from my creativity, which to me is synonymous with my soul. So it was quite an experience. And I've learned so much looking back from when we do that, when we dismiss our soul or our creativity, what the impact can be. And, for me, it ended up being, I got really sick, and that's kind of what brought me back to it. But yeah, those were rough years when I decided to not live bravely. I mean, I was living a fear-based life, walking away from something I love to do. And, it's unfortunate. I think a lot of people go through that.
So how did creativity help you to stop living a fear-based life?
I think it gradually taught me to love and honor myself. I think it's really powerful. It's empowering. I think that's why it's discouraged, and why, repressive societies tend to repress the arts, because there's so much self-discovery there through the creative process. I was remembering who I was. I was remembering my power, and my self-worth. So in that sense, I think that's kind of the journey that I've been on ever since.
It's like a return home, isn't it? Like you said, you're remembering yourself, like a reconnection of...
Yes.
Yeah.
And it feels so good.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? I relate to that because I've had very similar experiences where I've just felt that connection through art, like art brought me back home. So what did those early days of painting look like for you, and how did you figure out what you wanted to do? And can you take us through that a little bit?
You know, I wasn't painting to impress anyone, which I think is a good way to start. I had no intention of turning this into a business. I was just painting to survive, and I was painting because I loved it so much. Like, I still, like, I just talking about it, I want to go paint right now. But I think, you know, I mean, the early days, you know, I didn't really know what I was doing. I was just exploring and not judging. And I experimented with different things. So like when I started painting mixed media girls, like girls' faces was really popular. And I tried that. It didn't quite feel right. And I realized whenever I just let myself be, I was painting flowers. And at first I'm like, oh, I don't want to paint flowers because everybody paints flowers. And so I tried like doing other things. But finally, through like kind of being aware, I was like, you know, when I just let myself be, that's what's coming out of me. And I don't want to fight that. I don't enjoy resistance. You know, I don't. So when I finally just accepted, this is who I am. This is what I paint. And I think just through painting a lot, I found my style, and, you know, just started to happen naturally. But I do think you really have to, for me, I had to put in a lot of hours and a lot of exploration and acceptance of whatever was happening. And, you know, I think if we suppress stuff, we're going to miss moments where we could learn about our, you know, our true expression. So yeah, it was fun. It was always fun.
So were you painting every day and just doing as much as you could?
Yeah, you know, the funny thing was that heat allergy, it was such a gift in disguise, because I could not do anything else. I feel like the universe like smacked me down and said, I'm going to take everything away from you. Now what are you going to do? All you can do is paint. What are you going to do now? And that's all I could do. I didn't have to do like carpool. I couldn't cook. I couldn't clean. I couldn't do anything except paint. It was like, it was so weird, you know, that happens. And I eventually got better, but I have like, you know, I had a bunch of little kids, and it was like all of a sudden my schedule was clear, and that's the only thing I could do. So I did it. And, you know, I'm really glad I did. I mean, you know, I want to be a mom too, but that scenario would never exist if I had been healthy. It just, I would have had to sneak it in here and there. And so I had about 6 months to a year of just painting.
How did it transition from being a healing practice to being an art business?
Yeah, that was gradual too. And what happened is I found a book. It was Kelly Ray Roberts' book, and I'm Taking Flight. And I was reading it, and I was like, I want to do what she's doing. I want to make this my life, because I knew if it was a hobby, at some point it wouldn't take precedence over other things. And I was like, this, I want to devote my entire life to this. And so after reading her book, I was like, okay, I want to do this. Also, I love, when I'm excited about stuff, I like want to tell the whole world about it. So I think because I was so excited, I wanted to share my art and my stories with others. And what was happening to me, I wanted to share that transformation. And I could sense that, oh my gosh, this could heal so many people and help people get through tough times. And, you know, so I don't know, I was really ready to share it as I was going through it.
And were you sharing that via Instagram, Facebook, or what were the main, I guess, platforms that helped you grow your art?
So back then it was mostly Facebook. I accidentally signed up for a art business class online. I thought it was a, like how to paint, but I didn't read the description. So I signed up, and then after I realized, oh my gosh, this is about art business. I don't even know how to paint. Like, what am I doing? But it was serendipitous, because I learned right from the beginning how to like do things online and create a community. And so that ended up being a blessing too. And so, yeah, I really did a lot online because I was immobile. I couldn't go outside. I couldn't travel to, like, you know, there's some New York shows for licensing. And you know, arts, and I couldn't do anything. So online was like my only way to communicate with other people. And I started submitting to different blogs and different websites, my articles and my art, and really enjoyed it. So it felt natural and easy for me to do that. Yeah, I know there's a lot of different paths, and I feel like you have to find what really you enjoy, otherwise you won't do it. Like, I hate Twitter, so I won't do Twitter. I don't like it, so I don't.
I don't do it either. I think I made an account and did it for about a week or something, and I was like, nah, not for me.
Me too. Yeah. And I just knew it's probably at one point people are like, you have to do Twitter, you know, for your art. And I'm like, no, I know I'm not going to stick with it because I don't enjoy it. So yeah, I just kind of have to make decisions based on what I know I can sustain, and that was not sustainable for me. So
yeah, because sustainability is really important, isn't it? Like, you know, making sure that you can be healthy while running an art business.
Yeah, definitely. Like, we're in this for the long, long term. I agree.
Because I was having a look at your website before I hopped on the call and seeing all the things that you have been involved with. And I did think to myself, wow, Carrie's got a lot going on here. Between, you know, licensing your work and running retreats and workshops, and you've got a big online shop, so a lot of different products and things, and then also your passion projects that you have been involved with, and we'll talk a bit about those in a minute. But how do you decide what you're going to work on?
You know, I choose what makes me feel alive and excited, and like, if I can't sleep at night. I love coming up with new products. It's sort of almost like an addiction now. And I get so excited. Like, when I think of something, I want to do it like right away. And I just love it. So I've been following that like kind of draw, because I used to teach more. And then I started feeling the shift towards like, I'm really having fun designing products. And so I kind of let myself swing that way. But it's been gradual. So it's taken me like years and years to kind of build up my shop. So I it's like little baby steps. And, you know, one day I opened my shop and I was like, wow, you know, I have a lot of stuff. I remember when I just had prints, and it's like little baby steps, like consistent every day, like one thing. I always say, like, I tell my son, like, take one step every day in the direction of your dream. So whatever your dream is, like, just do one thing every day, even if it's like 5 minutes. Just stay connected to it. And you know, so I think that's what I've done. Anything that makes me excited and want to work and put in the hours, that's what I'll do. If something doesn't sound appealing to me, I probably will let it go.
Yeah, that following the joy makes all the difference, keeps you excited.
Yeah, because it's all I want to do. Like, I'm sure, like you, I don't know. I feel like a lot of artists work, it's almost like a 24/7, you know, I don't take really any days off because there's nothing else I want to do. Like, I would pick this over anything else anyone could offer me. And that's how I know that's what I want to be doing. You know, it's like my life work. It's not like my job, but it's like, it's my purpose in life.
So with all the different products and things that you've created, can you tell us a bit about the process that's involved in going into that area, like licensing your work or creating lifestyle products?
So as far as licensing, I had a lot of companies contact me initially from posting on Pinterest. I used to be really good about doing that. I'm more like Instagram focused now. I think there was a shift. I don't know if Pinterest is still the place to be, but I had some companies reach out to me, and my agent found me on Pinterest. So I do have an agent because, you know, I have limited time. I am a mom and business owner, and I don't really enjoy the business side in that respect, like the contracts and all that. So I do have an agent, and so it's simplified because I just give them my art and then they work out the deals. But in my contract, I had them have a non-exclusive clause because I originally it was exclusive and I didn't want to do that because I can still negotiate my own deals. So I already worked with some companies like Hallmark and a few other companies I had established relationships with. So I didn't need my agent to, you know, help me with that. So I'm allowed to work my own deals without my agent. But in the meantime, that agency is also like, they're doing their part to sell my art. It's a kind of an ideal situation. And I like to mention that just so people know, you can have non-exclusive representation. So if a card company contacts me, I can work out a deal with them on my own. I don't have to involve my agent. And I think that's really important. And as far as, you know, my products that I've started making myself, I'm so inspired by my own personal life and my stories, childhood stories. I'm starting to create products inspired by my life, which is so thrilling. And those are the things that keep me awake at night. So like, I can give you an example. My mom I went to an overnight camp. And my mom would like send me with a box and she'd have a note and a little present every day. So, you know, the envelope would say the day of the week. And then I'd open it and it'd be like a little love letter from her or my dad or my grandparents. Like she did this whole thing. And I can't even tell you how much that meant to me. Like as a child, I felt so loved and so special. So in that, I want to like give people that feeling. So now I'm coming out with this thing called 12 letters, and it's 12 letters that, you know, I write, and they're in envelopes, and you give them to them, say a college student or whoever. You can give them the whole stack at once and they can open one every month, or you can, you know, send them monthly, whatever you want to do. The thing that excites me about that is I'm not aware that there's anything else like that out there, but the personal story means so much to me that I geek out about this stuff. And so, like, I like to come up with things that are like something related to like my life and the love, you know, I've experienced. I don't know. That's what I do. And it's really fun. It's like, it's fun to take a memory and then like give it a new life by saying like, oh my gosh, like I want other people to have this feeling. And I don't know. But so, if you have like your own personal stories and you can like think of like, well, how would this translate to something I could share with other people? You know, that's kind of a fun way to work.
I love the way that your work, and you call it your life work, it just goes way beyond the art. It's about sharing stories, connecting with others, bringing people together, because you've done so many projects, and let's have a chat about them because they are brilliant. So you've got this Single Rose project, and you haven't forgotten, Carrie.
No. I was like, oh, that would have been a good example. Like when I just brought up the letters, I'm like, oh, the Rose project.
Yeah. And then also your art bus. So let's talk about the Rose project and how that came about, because it sounds like that had a similar kind of start.
It really did. You're right. That was probably the first one that I'm consciously aware of that directly linked to my childhood and my family folklore. And I guess maybe, yeah, that might be like the message that I would want to like share with your listeners is like, you know, when you can take your own life and make it like magical and like transform it in your memory. So my grandfather used to give my grandmother a rose every month. And instead of a dozen on Valentine's Day, he would surprise her once a month. I love that story. And I was, yeah, it's beautiful. They were a beautiful couple. And she always smelled like roses and they were all over their house. And, you know, she just loved roses. And so I was going through a really hard time in my personal life. And I kind of always thought as a child, like I would know my true love when he gave me a rose, just like my grandfather. And I had this vision in my head that like, that was going to happen to me, but it didn't happen to me. And so I was like going through a really hard time. And I was like thinking, I think I'm unlovable, you know, I decided to buy myself a rose. And I did. And then I walked out of the store like beaming and like skipping. And I'm like, oh, I finally got a rose. And I bought it for myself. And then everyone else is looking at the rose. And I noticed everyone looking at the rose. And then I was like, oh my gosh, like they need roses too. They were smiling at the flower. It was making them happy. And then that's what I thought. Oh my gosh, they need roses too. And then I realized I'm the one that's supposed to give the roses. So I was like, my whole life, I was like waiting to receive the rose. Like from my grandmother's perspective, I was like, I'm supposed to be my grandfather. And so I decided I was going to give a rose away every day for a year to a stranger. And that was like by far the most spiritual transformation of my life. I had no idea why I was doing it. I did not anticipate that, but what it ended up being was like what I call an accidental spiritual pilgrimage, because all those people became like my like continents. Like it was mind blowing what happened in that year. And that was, you know, from a family story. And so ever since then, I think I've been inspired to keep recreating these family stories in my own interpretation of them.
That is just such an incredible undertaking, and the way that you listen to the message, and it reminds me of the beginning of your story where you talked about the message to paint, and then this other message that's come through that's saying it was never about receiving the rose, it was about giving the rose. And then it's just, it's incredible, Carrie, what is happening, like the things that you are allowing to come into your life because you're open to receiving them.
Yeah. And, you know, they both came at kind of dark, hard times. And the funny thing is that you're very perceptive, because what I didn't share was I was sitting in meditation and I was like, you know, kind of praying like, oh, you know, I'm a mess. Like I was getting divorced. So financially I was like, oh my gosh, you know, what am I going to do? And then, you know, I'm like, I'm unlovable, and I'm having all these like kind of negative self-talk. And then I hear this voice in meditation say, follow the roses and everything will be okay. And I was like, what the heck does that mean? Like, what are you? And I kept hearing it like every time I would meditate, but I didn't know what it meant. And then when this whole thing happened one day when I was like kind of feeling down, I bought myself a rose. That's when I was like, oh my gosh, like I'm supposed to give the roses. Okay. So it, you know, it's a little woo-woo, but I do think, I mean, like millions of people have reported hearing their intuition, or, you know, some people think it's your spirit or whatever. I mean, I think if we're open, there's a lot of messages for us, our inner wisdom. So yeah, it was so, oh my gosh. And it did impact my relationship with creativity in a beautiful, unexpected way. And it was just the most magical year. So, and I am writing a memoir about it. It's just taking me a while.
Look forward to hearing more about it when you get the memoir finished. So that year, how did it impact upon your creativity, this decision that you made to undergo this project?
So when I started, you know, like I said, I didn't know why I was doing it, but because I've practiced the creative process of, you know, the painting process of like, you don't really know what's going to happen. I was like primed for it. But what happened is I was every day participating in a creative act. I was like co-creating an experience that otherwise wouldn't have happened. So I'm like, I'm feeling the presence of this other entity co-creating these moments with me. So there were a lot of like what you would say are like miracles or just unexplainable moments where I would give someone a rose and then they would share the story with me about why this was significant. And I'm sharing it on Facebook and my friends are like, how are you doing this? How do you know to pick these people? It's like, and I'm like, I'm not. I could feel the presence of this creative force, the same one I paint with, you know, coming into this moment with us, with me and this other person. You could feel it. And so every day I was connecting with that creative force, and it became to the point where I felt so connected to it. And I'm so aware of it that I approached my art differently. Like I knew it was always there. I knew it. We were swimming in it. We're always invited to participate with it. It's like, it's waiting for us to co-create with it. We are always invited. And so when I would come to my art, I had this absolute surrender. Like I've always painted with faith, but like faith that everything will be fine. I don't get too uptight with my art, but like I had this complete surrender. Like I know the force is there. I am like all in, and whatever happens, like work through me. And it was, oh, so it was so good. So that was really, really transformative for my creativity to just know this has me, this is holding me. You know, a lot of people say like, sometimes the muse shows up, sometimes it doesn't, you know, it doesn't always fall from the skies. I'm like, no, it's always there. We're the ones that don't show up, you know, like it is literally around us. We cannot escape it. It's if we have a block, it's in us. It's not, you know what I mean? So that really impacted me. And I don't know what to say about that. It's just magic. So
I think magic sums it up.
Yeah.
I want to loop back a little bit to your painting and talk about your process and how you, let's go right to the beginning. Like, how do you start? Is there a ritual, or take us through it?
You know, I always start with gratitude. I think it's like almost, I don't even think about it, but I just kind of take this breath of like, so grateful to be able to do this work, because someone asked me once, like, how do you find joy in the creative process? And I was like, the joy is that we get to do it. Like, oh my gosh, how lucky am I? I have paint, I have a canvas, I have brushes. Like, I'm already luckier than like 99% of the people in the world. So, oh my God, like I could kiss the ground right now in gratitude. Like, oh, this is amazing. You know, like I'm so joyful. I haven't even started painting it. I'm like, thank you so much for letting this be my life. You know, like I'm so grateful. And then I just start painting, and, I paint intuitively. And, so I just, you know, like my joy guide my brush, and I don't worry about what it's going to look like. Because I have faith that, you know, everything will be okay. Like I don't need to worry. And if I worry, then it's going to affect the painting in a negative way. So I just kind of, I don't know. I mean, it feels like this act of like love, and yeah, I don't know. I just let whatever happens, happens. And I always say like, I turn it over to this other power, this creative force, because I'm not kidding. I'm always like, you know, I'm not that good at this. Like I'm limited. And if this was up to me, this would be like really limiting. And I want to just see what happens when I turn it over to something else greater and more, you know, more powerful than I am. So that's kind of how I paint. I'm pretty passive person, so that really works for me. I'm not a controlling person. I don't like making decisions. So it's like intuitive painting is hard if you like to be in control, and I don't like it. I always say, if my parents still let me live with them, like I'd still be living with, like, I'm fine letting other people
That is so interesting. What you describe is such an act of complete surrender, and it's something that I think that I've struggled with, and I think you've hit the nail on the head there with the control thing, because I think I must just have a more controlling side where I like to have some parameters and things like that, so I don't approach my art in that way. But is it something, and I'm curious, like, is it something that you always had, or did you build trust over time? So what I mean by that is, when you started painting, did you ever get frustrated, like when with your, you know, paintings not coming together, or it's like you've wasted time or something like that, and at the end of the session you don't like what you see? Or did you always have that trust?
I feel like it's a little of both. I think I'm naturally tend to not care too much about a lot of, you know, stuff. And also,
isn't that wonderful though? That's wonderful. Yeah,
it's very strange. It's a family trait. My entire family has that. It's, you know, it usually is your best quality and your worst quality. And that's kind of true. I definitely developed it over time as I learned that the process works. And so, you know, when I started, I didn't know what was going on, and I probably, I didn't care, because I just was like having fun. And then I think, you know, there were times where I was like, oh, I don't really like this. But my next thought after that is, that just means it's not finished. So I'm not really supposed to like it. And I would just keep going until I liked it, you know. And so I think the more you do it, I'm sure you know this too, it's like this tried and true process where it's like, it all works out, or you just keep going. And I just love the ride. I love like the ups and downs. I love when I hate it, or you know, like it's not that I hate it. I don't hate it my or ever, but you know, when you're just like, this is not right. This is not what it's supposed to be. And then you get to do something really bold and wild. I love that moment of like, let's just totally like kind of destroy it. Because destruction is like such an important part of the process. And I don't know. I think it's fun. And I think it's fun to practice on the canvas, because if I can't be brave on my canvas, then how am I going to be brave in my life? I mean, it's literally like paint and like, you know, I don't know. It's just like, it's okay to practice this here. So it's definitely over time, but you know, you just can't care too much. I feel like, you know, you just can't think of it as anything too precious. I think the painting knows what it wants to be already. I think it's predetermined. So I feel like I can relax because this is already determined and I just need to like let it happen. I don't need to like force it. And so I don't have to like stress about it, but it could take me like years. There's paintings that have taken me years and, you know, I put them down for a while and I grow fond of them. I feel like it gives us more time together to like get to know each other. And I respect them because they're like patient and they're not willing to like settle for anything other than like what they're supposed to be. I mean, I respect those paintings. That's a different attitude than saying like, I suck at painting. That painting sucks. You know, I can't finish it. I mean, it's a whole different mindset. And one of them's helpful and one of them isn't. But I do grow to love those paintings. Like the ones that spend time with me, I like love them. Even though, you know, it's like 2 years. I'm like, who are you? What do you want to be? And then they're waiting for me to like learn something, or they're waiting for me to develop my skills so that I can actually help them, you know, birth or whatever. So these are the weird stories that I tell myself in the studio.
They are brilliant, brilliant stories. And it's so liberating when you get to that stage. You love the paintings that challenging, but you love them for that. I can relate to that too, because it took me a while to get there, but I've got to a point now where I'm fascinated by every aspect of the process and what it's showing up for me. But it wasn't always like that for me. It definitely was a tussle for quite a long time. Yeah,
we're really hard on ourselves. And I love I think every painting teaches us something. And so I look for like, what are you teaching me? You're teaching me patience. You're teaching me like, stay by your convictions. Like, you don't want to be that? Okay. You know, like, you don't have to do that. So I do have like conversations with them. And my attitude towards those difficult ones is like, you are going to be so awesome, because the hardest paintings turn out to be my favorite. And it's like, oh, I can't wait to see like who you are and what you are, because I know you're going to be amazing because you're taking like this long. That, I don't know, that there's like such a thrill in that alone, you know.
I just love hearing you talk about the conversations that you have with your paintings. It's just, it's inspiring. And yeah, the way that you talk to them, like, what are you teaching me? You're going to be amazing. Like those sorts of, that language is so powerful that you have, that mindset. So good, Carrie.
Oh, sorry. It goes back to that beginning of reciprocating like all the gifts it's given me, as like, you know, I want to give that back to it. It like was so kind to me. And then like, I want to stand here and be a witness and return that love, you know, to my art, which it feels very reciprocal. So, yeah.
I love the way that you talk about creativity as like, I don't know what the right word for it is, but it's like it's its own life, like its own entity, and that you have this utmost respect for it and gratitude for it. I mean, that's just powerful.
Yeah, when you think it's a lot, if you consider it as a living
yes
entity instead of this dead object, that is a way different experience. Like if you just see your paint and your canvas as like dead objects that you are manipulating, that is like a completely different story, you know. So
my mind is blown talking to you. I just have to say that. You are incredible. Okay. I'm so distracted by, well, not distracted is not the right word, but I'm so in awe, I should say. But I do want to talk about your bus as well, because that is something else too. And for anyone who's listening, I definitely encourage them to go and have a look at your website, your Instagram, so they can get a visual of all these things that we're talking about. But how did the idea for the bus come about? Can you tell us about Rosie?
Yes. So there, you're going to notice a theme here. I was going through another like kind of dark time in my life. All the best things in my life, I think, have come from those really dark moments. So there's definitely a theme emerging in my life and maybe everybody else's. But I couldn't find an affordable studio. I live in Seattle, and it's a kind of expensive area. And I also had just gotten out of a kind of a dysfunctional relationship with a man who offered me this beautiful studio in his home. And then it was like gorgeous and dreamy. And then I realized that this wasn't not a good relationship to be in. So I had to like walk away from that. I had already like bought furniture and like was designing it. And so got out of that. And so I was kind of sad. And I was like, oh, where am I going to paint? I lived in the 900-square-foot apartment with three other people. So I had a roommate and two kids with me. And then my studio was in that space. So it was hard. And one day I kind of got frustrated and I was like, you know what? I'm going to buy a school bus and make it my art studio. And so I did. I looked on Craigslist. I found this. It's a short school bus. And it was really inexpensive. School buses are really inexpensive. And so I bought it. It was cheaper to buy the bus than 1 month's rent at this local little area that I lived in, this little town, to rent a studio. So I renovated it. And it's mobile, so it's a traveling studio, and it's my store. So it's a storefront and studio, and it's like the rage. I had no idea. I painted it pink with like painted roses on it. Again, this is a tribute to my grandparents because my grandmother loved roses, and my grandfather was like this inventor, and this is something my grandfather would do. He would totally buy a bus and like transform it. So I just feel like their spirit is with me, and this is like combining both of them. I have a picture of them in there. And it was the end of the Rose Project. This was kind of like the climax of the Rose Project. So it represents freedom and independence and mobility. And people love that bus. Like did it for me, but now it's become more of like this, I think it's like a symbol of hope for a lot of other people of like how, you know, thinking outside the box. And when you have a challenge, it's like, you know, being creative with your solution, and it's just fun. It makes people happy. It's amazing. I love it.
What role does the bus play now for you?
I can take it anywhere I want. Like we can go to some of the beaches around here, go down the city and paint, and I can paint on the roof. I built like a roof on the deck, but more like there's several reasons I did that. One was that I wanted people to see the creative process. I wanted them to actually know that like artists live here, we exist. I wanted kids to see like, hey, you can be an artist, you know, you can do art. It's like a viable profession. And I wanted them to witness the process because it's often behind closed doors. So I did that to bring art visibility to my community. But yeah, mostly now it's also a store. I have a lot of products, so I take it to festivals and different art shows, and it's really fun. I love that. Yeah, people like, you can't not smile when you see it. It's just, like really cute and sweet.
It looks pretty big as well. I guess it's a school bus, so it's
big. So it's a big short bus. Like it's in between like a regular size and a small. So it's pretty significant. It's easy to drive. Yeah. I mean, I'm so glad I did it. I wasn't sure if it was like a midlife crisis or not, but my dad was like, he's a very conservative businessman. I actually thought he was going to be like, what are you doing? And he thought it was brilliant. And he said, what if I don't like it? What if I do all this and I don't like it? And he's like, well, then just sell it. And I was like, oh, you're right. And then I bought it. So he kind of like helped me, you know, I did have a moment where I questioned my sanity, but it worked out. That's the thing is like, You know, it's like you just keep going and you do something. And if it doesn't work out, you just pivot, you know, you do the next thing. It's, you just never know. But I'm really glad I did it.
It's funny the way, isn't it, that we sometimes think that a decision is the be all and end all. And I'm thinking about like when people, you know, maybe quit their job to try something. And the reality is, in many cases, like you said, if it doesn't work, you can just move on, or you could get another job, or you could sell that thing, or, you know, like life is a lot more fluid than we give it credit for.
I agree. You know, yeah.
Sometimes we just need that little nudge or that reminder from someone to, you know, to say to us, you know, if it doesn't work out, it'll be okay.
And you just never know unless you try it. And I think that's a good point. It does help. And I also think people can overthink things and really start to talk themselves out, like all the reasons why this won't work. Like a lot of people ask me, like, where are you going to park it? And I was like, I don't know. Like, it's just like, it'll work. You know, it'll work out. Like, so I'll park it somewhere. You know, I don't. So, yeah, I think it helps to sometimes, you know, follow your heart a little bit more than your head. But
so you mentioned before that there's been a bit of a theme or a pattern where these moments have happened in darker times or when you've been going through struggles. There's probably people listening. In fact, I'm sure there are people listening who are in one of those periods of darkness. What words of encouragement do you have for someone who is questioning things, maybe feeling unloved? Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, I can speak to, you know, my own experience is like, it feels unbearable when you're in it. I don't want to like downplay that because, oh my gosh, but it's also this time of like fruitfulness and possibility and potential. It's like, it's a place of beginnings and transitions are so painful. Like anyone who's gone through childbirth knows that that's like the most painful part. But, you know, it's like in the darkness, there's so much potential there. And those moments are so like ripe with information and intuition. And I think when you're in those moments and you're really listening, I feel like your intuition can like, it'll guide you to the next thing. And unfortunately, sometimes there has to be this death or this, you know, awful experience to get to this next thing. And I don't know. I mean, you just have to have some support and coping skills. And, you know, I didn't think I was going to make it through that heat allergy crisis. But also, I did not have, I don't know, now that I look back, I'm like, why would I think that was going to be forever? I mean, things are always changing. And I've learned that. But I, you know, when you're in that panic state of depression and like, you know, fear, you're not like necessarily thinking that. But, you know, change is like always happening. So now I know those dark moments are, it will pass. And to listen, those are the moments when you really need to listen. And, you know, you're kind of like in a situation where your soul or your intuition or inner wisdom is like coming to the forefront because nothing else really matters. Like when I was sick, nothing mattered. Like everything physical and material went away. It didn't matter how many possessions I had or, you know, it's just like, nothing else mattered except my soul. And that's when it spoke. It was like, you know, so I think those are really valuable times, but they're definitely not easy. So now you have to be brave. I mean, you have to be brave enough to listen because I didn't have to listen to that voice. And, you know, you have to like take a chance sometimes.
It's hard when you're in there, but there is messages there if you can listen, if you can, as you said, be brave enough to listen. That's it's beautiful and encouraging. So thank you for sharing that and for sharing with us your kind of full spectrum of experience through your art journey, the highs and the lows that have got you to where you are now.
Yeah. I think, you know, I don't know, probably I would say, maybe you can agree, but it's really a journey and like persistence. Like it's just had to keep going.
Yeah, absolutely agree with that. There is so much of it that involves just continuing to move forwards and to trust in what's happening. So what's on the cards for the future for you? What have you got coming up?
So I've been writing a lot. I'm almost finished with a book. about sort of my art philosophy and my kind of, you know, a little, we touched on a little bit of it today, but just my perspective and approach to my art. And I'm really excited about that because I get really excited talking about it. I love it. And a couple other books, I'm working on a children's book about the bus. So that's exciting. And those will hopefully be out soon. I don't have any plans to teach right now, but I usually have something on the horizon. So that's kind of it, you know, blending the art and writing and storytelling. And
I am super excited about the book where you're digging in with your art philosophy, especially after having this conversation with you today, because I know that that's a book that I need in my life. So I will be keeping an eye out for that when it does become available. Do you have any idea what kind of time frame?
I don't know. I'm kind of waiting to hear from the publisher, but I do feel like that book is important to me because it's kind of my gift that I've taken from that heat allergy crisis. And like, it's, I'm feeling like I'm just opening my hands and saying this to everyone else, like, this is what I have to offer. This is like, you know, what happened for me. This is how I am able to have this experience with creativity because of that. So it's really healing. It's a healing process to be like, this is what I've taken from that. And now I want to like lay it before everyone else and say, here it is. This is, you know, what I can bring you from that. And so it is meaningful to me.
Such a gift. I can't wait for it. So I'll keep an eye out for it. And for anyone listening, what's the best way for them to keep up to date with you? Is it through your newsletter or?
I'm really active on Instagram. I do have a newsletter too, which I'm not as good about something, but Instagram and that would be great.
Okay, so we'll send everyone over to you on Instagram. So that's at Carrie Schmidt, is that right?
Yeah, and everyone misspells my name, but if you, yeah, do you want me to spell
yeah,
it?
Yeah, spell it out because I want to make sure people can find you.
Yeah, so it's CarrieSchmi. T as in Tom, T as in Tom. So most people do DT, but I'm two T's.
Okay.
That's it.
Beautiful. All right. So everyone can go and check out your gorgeous artwork, which is so, yeah, soulful is the word that comes to mind when I look at it. And after having this conversation, that makes perfect sense.
Oh, thank you. Well, I'm such a huge fan of your work. I just love it. And yeah. It's pretty incredible.
Well, thank you so much for making this time to come on the podcast and to chat about your journey and share your wisdom, which I have actually been scribbling notes down while I've been listening to you, because sometimes I try and find like a quote or something in the conversation and now I'm like, I'll be quoting this whole conversation.
Oh my gosh. Well, thank you. Thank you for letting us talk. I mean, this is my favorite subject and I appreciate you. It's a huge honor to do this. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Carrie. I'm wishing you all the best with everything that you've got going on because you truly are a gift.
Oh, thank you. So are you, Laura. Thank you.
Well, I don't know about you, but this conversation gave me tingles. I hope that you enjoyed it. And if you want to find out more about Carrie, make sure that you go over to her Instagram page, follow her, and then you'll be able to keep up to date with all the things that she has going on. Before I go, I wanted to mention that I do have a vlog this week. If you are new to the podcast, I often record a video that goes hand in hand with the conversation. So this week, I am very much inspired by Carrie, and I'm in my studio painting big and looking at how I can develop a more loving and compassionate relationship with creativity. It's all about surrendering to the process and being okay with what happens on the canvas. So I hope that you'll join me for that. And if you want to find the vlog or any previous episodes, head on over to laurahornart.com/vlog. So thanks again for tuning in, and I hope that you'll join us again next week.